from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. Hi, I'm John Sepulveda. We're going to begin in San Joaquin County. There, the sheriff coroner, Steve Moore, is being stripped of his role in death investigations. County supervisors will establish a medical examiner's office headed by a licensed forensic pathologist. Now, this comes after reporting from KQED's Julie Small, who has been investigating and reporting on the office.
The unanimous decision comes 4 months after Sheriff Steve Moore was accused of interfering in death investigations and pressuring doctors who worked for him to change their findings. The board commissioned an audit, and Dr. Roger Mitchell told them change was needed.
A medical examiner, a physician, to implement, to decipher exactly what it is that needs to be done to meet these recommendations is what San Joaquin County needs.
Before the vote, Sheriff Moore told supervisors he would support whatever they deemed best.
Because that's what I want. I want what is best for San Joaquin County, and I have always endeavored to do that in everything I have done while I have been sheriff coroner.
Mitchell's audit found deficiencies in the way the coroner's office investigates sudden, suspicious, or violent deaths, including sending patrol deputies with no training to death scenes to collect evidence. County officials are still working out the details of how to transition to a medical examiner's office, but we're told it would take at least a year. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in Stockton.
All right, let's talk marijuana. When cannabis was made legal in California, managers at workplaces and their employees raised a really important question. Can people still be fired for failing a drug test? Well, the short answer is yes, but one state lawmaker wants to change that. Alan Young reports from Sacramento.
Assemblyman Rob Bonta has come to view medical marijuana as a civil rights issue. The Oakland Democrat says he's tired of people losing their jobs for taking a medication with fewer negative side effects than opiates.
California patients who use medical cannabis are being discriminated against in the workplace. They shouldn't be. This bill would end that discrimination.
Under AB 2069, companies could still fire an employee for testing positive if they don't hold a medical card, or if they show up impaired at work. If a medical patient did test positive, the employer would need to treat the matter as any other medical condition and make a reasonable accommodation to help the employee continue working. Federal employees would be exempt from the bill's protections. Anthony Trenton oversees the Sacramento franchise of ArcPoint Labs, a national drug testing service. The problem with the bill, he says, is that when it comes to cannabis, it's hard to determine when the drug stops affecting the user. In terms of productivity, Trenton argues that a marijuana hangover can be just as bad.
Loss of productivity, people are calling out sick. It's overall hurting your business if you're not testing for marijuana.
James Relis is the owner of Relis Florist in Sacramento, a family-owned flower shop that recently celebrated 71 years in business. Relis does not currently drug test his employees, but he plans to start since cannabis is now legal in California. He's worried, though, that this bill could make it more difficult to prove whether marijuana had a role in a workplace accident.
That's just another headache for small business.
AB 2069 is scheduled for its first committee hearing today in the state capitol. For the California Report, I'm Alan Young in Sacramento.
All right, let's go to Silicon Valley and ask a simple question. When Facebook takes down a post, say because it's offensive or because there's nudity, who decides it and why? Here's KQED's Sam Harnett.
Facebook has been criticized for years about how it censors content. There are hate groups with pages that haven't been shut down, while at the same time, some artwork showing naked figures gets pulled.
I had a piece of content taken down that was a painting of Bea Arthur of the Golden Girls, nude. Great, great painting. John Curran, 1991.
Jillian York is director of International Freedom of Expression at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The organization has battled against censorship since the early days of user-run online forums. But Facebook is a massive corporation publishing tons of content. Some could be dangerous, but it's tricky. Take the word dyke. It's a slur, but it's also been reclaimed and used in a positive way. The advocacy group Listening to Lesbians criticized Facebook for censoring the word. The company is trying to navigate things like this.
They said that they try to get the nuance in that, but in reality, we still see content that's using that term in a positive way go down on a daily basis.
Facebook just made public how its decisions are made. In a 27-page community standards web post, it lays out what you can and cannot put on Facebook. It covers everything from animal cruelty to nudity to election propaganda. Facebook is also going to now let users appeal when a post is taken down. These rules are detailed, but Santa Clara law professor Eric Goldman says they show this process is subjective.
Every single element of Facebook's content moderation guidelines had some place where we as lawyers could start litigating over what that meant and how that would be applied to specific facts.
Is it bullying or a joke between friends? Art or porn? At the end of the day, humans decide. Facebook has a whole team of content moderators. Goldman says the guidelines and human curation show how Facebook, like Twitter, is not a neutral platform, but a media company that makes conscious editorial decisions.
At some point, I don't think there's any positioning Facebook could take other than it is a media company with editorial standards that it tries to apply consistent with its editorial discretion.
But unlike a media company, Facebook's not liable for what users post, no matter how much the company curates the content. That's thanks to a law put on the books in 1996. Regardless, Facebook is now under enough pressure from its users that it's hired 7,500 people to review content. Goldman says that number is definitely going to grow as Facebook tries to police the content uploaded by its over 2 billion users. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett.
All right, we're going to spend some time on the question, what does it mean to be a man? It's a timely question, one that Pew Research Center recently asked. And from that survey nationwide, 60% of people say it's a good thing that society looks up to masculine men. But of millennials, only 24% identify as very masculine. And these nationwide findings can be seen in the halls of San Leandro High School, where a handful of self-identifying young men and teenage boys paint their nails or wear makeup or even skirts. We're at San Leandro High as part of KQED's Youth Takeover Project, and journalism students wanted to ask the question, what does it mean to be a man at San Leandro High? You know what? Enough of me. Let me bring in my co-reporters.
My name is Stephanie Murphy.
I'm Naomi Sagan.
I'm Mila Oliva.
And I'm Catherine Moses.
And this is our project on masculinity.
This project started with a belief.
We all agree that we believe the idea of masculinity is mostly a social construct.
Beliefs like men should have muscles and be strong and be into sports or competition. And my co-reporters wondered how much of this had to do with men trying to attract mates.
For instance, we think females often are attracted to a stereotypical type of masculinity.
Like this well-muscled, deep-voiced dude who does those Old Spice commercials.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me.
Okay, look back at me. And ask, how can we measure whether this is true at San Leandro High?
In order to test this hypothesis, we sent out a voluntary survey to all the students at San Leandro High School.
And so a survey was sent out to 2,600 students at San Leandro, but only a couple hundred responded.
We do realize that this was a very high non-response rate, but we did get some interesting responses that we would like to share.
All right, so let's get to it. What are some of the findings?
52% would not date someone who is shorter than them.
Just a quick note, the average American male is about 5'9"-ish, with women measuring in around 5'3".
Also, 47% of people would not date a bisexual man.
And that is the exact result of a recent poll commissioned by the sex toy company Adam and Eve. 47% of women would not want to date a bisexual man.
48% would not date a man who paints his nails.
For the record, men have been painting their nails for over 5,000 years. For example, warriors in China used to do it, but I digress.
And 53% would not date a man who wears makeup.
And I gotta be honest, at this point, none of this is really that surprising. About half of people at San Leandro are cool with bending gender norms, and the other half really aren't into it. So I said to my teenage colleagues, dig deeper.
So we asked a few people at our school about the type of males they were attracted to in order to better understand what our peers thought.
My name is Andrea Morgan, and I will be interviewing.
Mayana Ellis.
How old are you?
I am 14 years old.
What is your sexual orientation?
I am bisexual.
And where do you draw the line between femininity and masculinity?
Not all guys have to be masculine, but they can be whoever they want. I don't believe in that many stereotypes.
However, when we asked her whether she'd date a guy who was shorter than her, she had a different response.
Would you date a guy who is shorter than you?
Not really.
Why is that?
I just don't. It feels kind of weird for me to be the taller person because I've always been kind of short.
So let me stop that for a second. We are hearing something in this interview that society writ large is struggling with right now. How to be open and inclusive with gender bending. Or another way to think of it?
People can have a very open ideological view of masculinity, but when push comes to shove, stereotypes dictate their romantic preferences.
Even when someone is trying so hard to be accepting and open-minded. Take a listen to this exchange.
My name is Naomi Sagan, and I will be recording an interview with
Linda.
So would you say you value physical or mental characteristics more?
Mental, because as we get older, like, we change, and if somebody's not good on the inside, physical, you get old, you get wrinkles and all that.
Would you date a guy who isn't really into sports or likes to do something like knit or draw?
Yes, I would date a guy who's not into sports or have different hobbies, because if you really love somebody, you accept everything about them and their hobbies too.
But when Linda was asked about guys who paint their nails,
this was her response.
No, because I don't paint my nails myself a lot, but no, I have to paint my nails. He's doing too much. I don't know.
And would you date a guy who wears makeup?
Yeah, I would date a guy who wears makeup but not lashes, because I feel like lashes, you are doing too much.
Basically, Linda is saying being sensitive is cool, but makeup, well, that's extra. And Linda's responses are pretty much what my colleagues at San Leandro found.
These interviews show that some stereotypes do linger. They can affect how we choose a partner, what we think is attractive, and ultimately how we view ourselves.
And just as it's true for San Leandro, it is true for society. According to that Pew study I cited at the beginning of the show, 6 in 10 adults say boys don't talk enough about their feelings, suggesting we want to develop males who are more sensitive and in touch with how they feel. But only 24% say it's cool if boys participate in activities normally considered for girls. Also, something else that's rather interesting, 33% of Americans say honesty and morality is the most important quality needed to be a man, followed by professional and financial success, leadership, and strength and toughness. For women, according to the survey, the most important values are physical attractiveness, empathy, nurturing, and kindness, suggesting it's not just San Leandro that's struggling with what it means to be both a man and a woman. And that's the California Report for Wednesday, April 25th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulvedo.
I'm Catherine Moses.
I'm Mila Oliva.
I'm Naomi Sagan.
And I'm Stephanie Murphy. Thank you for tuning in to our discussion on masculinity.
And have a great day.